من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، لا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين وخاتم النبيين وسيد المرسلين أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى آل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المظلومين، ولعن الله الدائم على أعدائهم أجمعين من ليلتنا هذه إلى قيام يوم الدين. My respected elders, brothers and sisters, we've gathered here tonight once again to commemorate the Shahada anniversary of Sayyidah Fatima al-Zahra alayha salam. One of the ayat of the Quran that describes the lady who is chosen for her time above all the other ladies, meaning Sayyidah Maryam alayhi salam, is in Surah Al-Anbiya, verse number 91. Allah Ta'ala says, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم وَالَّتِي أَحْصَنَتْ فَرْجَهَا فَنَفَخْنَا فِيهَا مِنْ رُوحِنَا وَجَعَلْنَاهَا وَابْنَهَا آيَةً لِلْعَالَمِينَ. Maryam alayhi salam was the one who was extremely chaste. She was the one who, as it says, أحصنت فرجها. Allah Ta'ala in the Quran invites us to look at His universe, to examine it, to study it, and to see if we can find any type of imperfection. And He says that when you go and look, you will not be able to see any furuj. There is no, there's no flaws, there's no vulnerabilities in this universe of His. When it comes to human beings, we have certain vulnerabilities. There are certain areas where we can be weak and where we can be targeted. But somebody who is chaste, somebody who protects themselves, somebody who has iffah, somebody who restrains themselves, is somebody who knows where their vulnerabilities are and they restrain themselves. And this quality of restraint is so valuable that Allah Ta'ala describes Maryam alayhi salam, the first adjective is allati ahsanat farjaha. She's somebody who is careful. She's somebody who protected herself. Now, Maryam alayhi salam is a figure from history. And when the Quran is being revealed, people, when they read about such individuals, obviously they have the desire to see them in person. Who is that person who took the qualities of Maryam alayhi salam but showed them in the most perfect way? We see in a tradition reported from our sixth Imam alayhi salam, he says that he quotes this verse from the Quran. He says that this is an example that Allah has struck for Fatima alayhi salam. Meaning that somebody who reads this ayah, if they want to see the perfect manifestation of this quality, they should look at Maryam al-Kubra, who is Fatima alayhi salam. Now, Fatima alayhi salam was the one, he says, إِنَّ فَاطِمَ أَحْسَنَتْ فَرْجَهَا فَحَرَّمَ اللَّهُ ذُرِّيَّتَهَا عَلَى النَّارِ. Meaning the same way that Maryam alayhi salam protected, she was careful, she restrained herself, and as a result, Allah chose her to be the mother of Isa alayhi salam. The same way Fatima alayhi salam, because she had that quality, Allah chose her to have that pure progeny which we protected from the fire. Allah. And as we remember Fatima alayhi salam, we are obviously looking at these qualities and trying to see how can we take them and apply them to ourselves. How can we take them and take these as values for our families and our communities? And so I would like to speak about this value tonight, which is the value of iffah, the value of restraint, the value of chastity. And when we look at the human being, we see that we are very vulnerable. We are very susceptible and prone to being influenced by the outside. We take in many things from the environments that we're exposed to, and the windows by which these things come in are our five senses. Now, of those five senses, which one is the one by which we receive the most information? If you ask yourself, like, where is it that you get the most influence from? Definitely, you see, it's the eyes. So my topic tonight is about the eyes and the influence of what we see. And I would like to particularly focus on this topic of how can we understand, you know, the impact that the media has, meaning like devices and screens and movies and shows. How can we understand what is the impact of that on us, on our children? And then what do we need to do about it? This is what I'd like to, inshallah, focus on this evening. Inshallah, we can launch into the topic with the salawat on Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. I'd like to begin with a hadith from Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam. He says that al-qalbu mushaful basar, which means what? A mushaf is a book, and al-qalb is the heart. Okay, so what is Imam alayhi salam saying? He's saying that what is it that writes in our heart? How is it that our heart gets filled with content? He says that pen of the heart is the eyes. Meaning that there's a direct connection between what we see and what we feel. Our heart in Islam is the center of our emotions. Our emotions are governed by what we see. Take that's number one. Number two, again from Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, he says, وَالْعَيْنُ جَاسُوسُ الْقَلْبِ. The eye is the spy of the heart. You know, when you would have an army, back in those days, the army would be going along, it would send out jasus, these spies who would go ahead, and what they would do is they would kind of get some advance information. How is the land up above? Where is the enemy camped out? And then they would come back and they would report that information back to the rest of the army. Now, what is it that is kind of scouting out, you know, the things and, you know, sort of taking the lead for our heart? It's our eyes. The ayn is the jasus of the qalb, meaning that that thing which is going to be giving us, you know, the direction about where we should go and what we should be careful about, what we should be looking out for, and what's good and what's bad, it's our eyes. And then he goes, the third one is wabaridul aql. The eye is the barid is the postman. You know, you have this one, what does the postman do? He goes and he sends messages. Okay, so what we get from this is that the eye is responsible for directing our emotions. The eye is responsible for giving us messages to our aql, for governing the way we think. So this is just one out of many, many traditions where we see that the Ahlul Bayt alayhim wasalam tell us that this eye has a very special role in determining who you are. Because after all, what are you other than your heart and then your aql? Right? These things are very much directly influenced by what you see. Now, when we take this on one side and we say that given that the eye has so much importance, right, how should we approach what we see? I'll ask you a question. What do you think about devices? Are devices good or are they bad? I bet you a lot of you would give me the answer that, okay, well, a device is good or a bit bad depending on what you use it for. If you use it to watch something good, then it's good. If you use it to watch something bad, then it's bad. But that is not a bad answer, but I believe it's a shallow answer. If we want to look at it more deeply, then we would say that a device can be used for good, it can be used for bad as well too. But let's look at, for example, an automobile. Automobiles, when they came along, they obviously, if you're using it for something to go somewhere, like you're going to the masjid, you're going to, you know, traveling to do sirat al-rahim or to help out a mu'min in need or something like that, or for education purposes, then that's good. If you're using it to do something bad, then it's bad. But look at how automobiles have impacted the environment. Right? Nobody can say that once automobiles came, then everything was the same as before. Now people could just go faster. No, there's effects that are associated with the automobile. Correct? You're with me, right? Now, when it comes to a device, we have to ask ourselves that, okay, is it just really a matter of, well, if I use it for good, then it's good. If it's, because when you start to think about it, you say, wait a minute. This device, for example, an iPad, has been created for a specific purpose. And it has particular effects on the person who views it. For example, people, you know, who study the impact of devices on a physical level on children, right, they will tell you that to give a device to a child who is under 2 is actually very dangerous for their health. You know, we have pediatricians in the audience here, you know, they can speak to this as well too, inshallah, even better than, of course, than I can. Right? You have companies that, for example, have baby bouncers now that have slots for the iPad. Right? Meaning that they're marketing it. They have apps for children who are that age. But even the major industry will say, you know, it's not a good idea for a child to be exposed to something at that age. Why? Because on a physical level, the child is going to be affected. Okay, until recently, you know, the different bodies in the US, they used to say that even up to the age 12, you should limit the amount of exposure that your child has to devices. Now they're changing it because of pressure. But the point is that if you just look at it at a physical level, definitely devices have some type of impact, that there's something that happens on a physical level. But we as Muslims, we as believers, you know, that we are more than just a body, we have to be concerned about the spiritual impact. What happens when we immerse ourselves in virtual worlds which are completely material in nature? You see, somebody whose children in the past, when they would be left alone without devices, they would have a chance to use something called the aql. They would have a chance to reflect and to think and to ponder. They would come to new types of understanding. They would have time to process the information that they had gotten through the daytime. But now, when you're stuck in front of a device, even if it's something good that you're watching, what's happening is that you're being taken into a bombardment of information which is material in nature. So this argument that says that, okay, if it's good, if you're watching what's good, then it's good for you. If you're watching what's bad, then it's bad for you. It's a very simplistic argument. We need to look at deeper than that. Now, when we look and see what sort of things are now being shown on media, I want to, you know, when it comes to this, this is a very deep discussion about if you want to analyze, like, you know, how things are changing and what is it that, for example, our youth are being exposed to. It's a long discussion, but I want to just highlight a few examples. Maybe sometimes, you know, those of us who might not be watching things too much, we're not aware of what's actually going on and what's changed. Now, I could give many examples which would be very inappropriate to talk about from here. In fact, what we'd like to do for these type of things is to have sessions with people who are 18 and over, you know, and actually show some snippets of things so that you actually get to see what's going on. But I'm just going to describe some things. These are things which are not, you know, rare and uncommon. These are things which definitely our youth are being exposed to. Okay, number one is video games. Video games are something where a lot of parents think that, you know, what's the harm? My child is going and playing games after all. What could possibly go wrong if they're playing games? Now, first of all, there are games which are absolutely filled with inappropriate content. The most popular game that is played by boys, it's hard to find a boy who has Xbox and PlayStation, these are things, who doesn't play this game, is a game which involves driving a car around a city, trying to run over people and getting awarded for doing so, taking a hammer and attacking policemen, trying to find elderly people on the street and then going to run them over. Okay, and taking drugs, having to torture somebody, and then other things which are unspeakable of. Okay, now this is a game. Now they've done studies, right? And they say that, you know, if the boy hasn't played it on his own device, on his own sort of gaming machine, then when he goes to his friend's house, it's very unlikely that he wouldn't play it. Okay. Now that's an extreme version. Let's go down a little bit, okay, to something called Call of Duty. Maybe you've heard of it. Call of Duty is a very, very popular game, right, where you basically go around and you kill. Now, just to give you an idea of what kind of mentality is associated with this game, if you are able to kill multiple people in a row within a short amount of time, then you get a prize in the game. Now, what are these prizes called? Well, one of them is the bloodthirsty prize. One of them is the merciless prize. One of them is the ruthless prize. One of them is the brutal prize. And, you know, when I go to children and youth and I ask them, I say that, okay, please describe to me which individual in history for you has these qualities. Somebody who's bloodthirsty, somebody who's ruthless, somebody who's merciless, right? Inevitably, they tell me that that sounds like Yazid, la'anatullahi alayh. So then I ask them that how can you be playing a game which awards you for being like Yazid? And I ask the parents that how can you be allowing your children to play a game which rewards them to be like Yazid? Right? It's a simple question. Okay. Now, let's step down to even a simpler game. There's a game called Roblox. Okay, it's meant for young children, typically. Okay, it's supposed to be, it's considered as a safe type of game. And I have to share this information. I feel like it's my responsibility to share it with you. All of us need to be aware of this. Okay? And it's a very childlike game. You go there, it looks like you're walking around with Lego figures. Okay? Now, within that game, there's many small games. You know, like sort of, it's a collection of different games. I'll give you an example of two of the most popular games right now. One of them is a game where the child will go, and now, when they enter the Roblox world, they are with strangers. They cannot just be with their own friends. They are with the whole world, anybody. In one of the games, the child who's playing the game takes the role of a baby who is waiting to be adopted. And they basically say, will you adopt me, will you adopt me? They meet different strangers along the way, and they ask them, please adopt me. And they wait until the stranger adopts them. Now, this is interesting. What does the stranger do? When they adopt them, they take them in their arms, they go with them in the street, they go to their home, and they put them in their crib, and then they start taking care of the domestic affairs. Now, you know, in today's world, right, like, what kind of sick type of ideology and mentality is this? That you be adopted by a stranger and they take you to the home and put you in the bed? Example number two, Roblox High School. That you might be in grade 3 or grade 4, but you get to play the role of being in high school. You get to dress up like a high school type of student and so on and so forth. Okay, now, if you go and look and see what kind of interactions happen in this game, you see that the type of conversations and the type of interactions that happen are the same that are happening in high school, right? We are sending our kids, for example, let's say, in to a protected environment, and now on the game, they're doing everything they would in normal life. And then sometimes parents, you know, the children will say that, okay, no, they filter out bad language, right? But this is, you know, anybody who knows about these things realizes that there's ways around this. I've seen this myself, that's not a prevention for bad language to actually be exchanged. Now, this is the reality, that even in what's considered the most innocent of games, you have these type of themes being promoted. And I haven't gone into details. Inshallah, one day maybe with the parents and the adults, we can talk about it a little bit more freely. In cartoons, I'll give you one example of a Disney cartoon that many of our children have seen, Zootopia. Okay. If you go and watch this cartoon, you see that, okay, well, it's meant for kids, right? You have everything is, right? But as part of this, you know, experience that happens, what takes place is that they are taken to a naturalist park, okay, where the animals are naturalists, and they would observe them doing various activities, okay, and I'll leave it at that. But imagine now in a Disney thing which is meant for kids, right? I'll give you another example, right? There's sometimes where it's raw, inappropriate material. There's sometimes where it's about trying to promote a certain ideology. Okay, in 2017, in March 2017, less than 1 year ago, for the first time, the Disney Channel aired a scene in which there was an explicit, or you could say, you know, a display of affection among two individuals of the same gender. And it was a big news. It was like, how can they possibly do this? Okay, that was at the beginning of it. Then, in August of 2017, they had an episode in a program that's meant for like five-year-olds where they showed a family that had an alternative family arrangement, if you know what I mean. In October of 2017, they made headlines when they said that one of their major shows that's geared for 10-year-olds is going to have a character who has a romantic interest in the same gender. And the way that they portray it, if you go and look at it, it's exactly the same way that they would portray a teenage romance. Except for now, the genders are the same. Now, this is being aimed at whom? It's being aimed at the children. Okay, through, you know, these companies that are supposed to be, you know, considered like they're safe and like, you know, harmless, right? But this is what they're doing. Now, it's not surprising. It's not surprising because, you see, we have a hadith of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wa sallam. Where he's reported to have said, you've heard this hadith before, he says, مَثَلُ الَّذِي يَتَعَلَّمُ فِي صِغَرِهِ كَالنَّقْشِ فِي الْحَجَرِ. You've heard this before. That when somebody in their young age, they learn something, it's like you engrave it into rock or into stone. It's not going to leave that. And so those people who would like to have something, leave an imprint in children, they do so in that age. And they use these type of devices to be able to carry their message. There's a very scary quote we have from Walt Disney himself, the founder of the Disney Company. He says that, think of a child's mind as a blank book. You see, he came to the same wisdom, he got it from the teaching of the Ahlul Bayt. Think of it as a blank book. During the first years of his life, much will be written on the pages. The quality of that writing will affect his life profoundly. Now, they understand this and they are making use of it for their own purposes. Okay, now, there's so many examples that we could give. One of the most popular YouTube programs for, again, children. There's a show where they have like a family, show a family, right? One of their episodes which has like more than 8 million views. It's about top 10 lies that children say. And what they do is they act out these different lies and they do so in a way which is very humorous. But you see, when our children are watching these types of things, right, obviously they're going to learn them. Obviously it's going to have an impact and we're going to see the results of it in the community. Because according to that hadith, that which the child is seeing is being written into their hearts. There's no filter there. There's no ability to filter it because they're children. Why is it that in recent times, especially like, you know, having the opportunity to be able to, you know, be with children and youth, you see the effects, right? Why is it that recently we've seen this value of honesty going away? Now it becomes very natural, very easy for people to lie. It's something I'm shocked by, that even, you know, it's not a value anymore in the society. Why? Because you have programming aimed at trying to take away this value. Why is it that in the last number of months, you know, it's ever since last summer where you saw the first wedding of that nature, we're seeing that among the youth, this issue is becoming a big thing. The same thing that Disney is trying to promote is becoming a big thing, even in our community as well too. It's not a coincidence. There's a direct correlation between what our children are being exposed to and the problems that we're seeing in the youth. Why is it that in the larger society as well too, right? Why is it that, for example, you see so much gun violence in this society? Well, it has something to do with the type of violence that's being promoted through the media.
If you can please recite salawat ala Muhammad.
Now, what we've seen, brothers and sisters, if you go and study the way that this is progressing, their techniques are becoming more and more sophisticated. One of the most popular shows that's available on Netflix and cable TV aimed at teenagers is a show where the whole effort is to try to justify a lifestyle of same-sex behavior through religious grounds. What they have a church which is founded on these type of principles. And it's very interesting. You know, it's as if they know the type of objections that religious people are going to bring to this from before, and from before they're trying to plant the seeds of doubt in the minds of the youth. So if you go and see, for example, one of the trailers that I had seen of it, they have a scene where there's a church, and the church is trying to do a conversion therapy session. Okay, basically they're trying to get somebody to change his orientation. Now, two of the members of that other church, which is oriented in that way, they come in into this church, and they start to quote verses from the Bible to show that this is all okay, there's nothing wrong with it. Even though, of course, we know that all major religions believe in one type of family and say that the God's creation is such, and this is the way that we're supposed to be. But they come and start quoting these Bible, and they get into a sort of war of quoting verses from the Bible, and eventually they show them as being winning. You know, so they even give religious justification through these shows for being able to support those anti-religious lifestyles. Now, when you look at this and you study it, and then you see the effects taking place, then you get scared, right? And what's even more scary is sometimes when we see that people aren't taking this seriously. I ask the parents, I say that, would you ever allow your children to have just strangers come home, somebody that you don't know, and for them to be conversing with them? Obviously not. Right? Let's say that even if you were there, okay, would you allow them to be talking to children that you don't know? Obviously not. So then why do we allow our children to go on these type of games where they're talking to perfect strangers? It makes absolutely no sense. Right? Most games these days, you end up talking to perfect strangers. So why is it that we would allow that? I don't understand. Maybe it comes from a lack of understanding. So that's why I wanted to raise a bit of awareness about the issue. Now there's more to talk about it, but what I'd like to focus on in the remaining time is some practical strategies regarding this. Inshallah, you can help me with salawat ala Muhammad. The first, I want to give some tips for families, and then inshallah a tip for the community. When it comes to the families, number one is that my sincere message to my brothers and sisters tonight is that if you would like to, if this is something which sort of has got your attention, you're concerned about it, then we need to make ourselves be the first point of change. If we want our children to have a correct type of interaction with the media, then we are the ones who have to set the example for ourselves. And in general, in parenting, whatever it is, if you want your children to read Quran, if you want them to be studious, if you want them to be some people who seek knowledge, if you want them to have good akhlaq, whatever it is, the primary means of doing so is to implement those things in yourself. We have a hadith from Imam Al-Baqir alayhi salam. يُحْفَظُ الْأَطْفَالُ بِصَلَاحِ آبَائِهِمْ. The way that children are protected is through the righteousness of their parents. Right? This is a very important principle. When we ourselves are attached to dramas and to serials and to programs and to YouTube channels and movies and whatnot, right? Then what can we expect from our children? You know, I was talking to a father who was saying that he's really worried about how his son is very, you know, addicted to video games. And then he tells me, he says that, you know what, to be honest, you know, at nighttime when my kids go to sleep, I bring out the Xbox machine, I start playing Call of Duty. So I was like, okay, brother, well, if you want to start, then that's the first place to start. Right? Whether it be games, whether it be movies, whatever it is, we have to start with that. We have to realize, you know, that these things have a very strong effect even on adults as well too. You see, in general, The eyes, because they have such an important role in determining who we are, the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam, they want us to be very careful about what we do with them. I'll give you one hadith. This is from the advice of the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. He says that there is no organ in the body which is less thankful than our eye. Okay, this itself is worth, you know, pondering upon. I don't want to go into it, but it's something which is very beautiful. Then he says, فَلَا تُعْطُوهَا سُؤْلَهَا. Do not give it everything it asks for. Restrain it, have controls, have limitations. Deprive yourself of those things which are eye candy for you. If you do otherwise, فَتَشْغَلَكُمْ عَنْ ذِكْرِ اللَّهِ عَزَّ وَجَلَّ. Otherwise, it's going to take you away from the remembrance of Allah. What are we here for? We've been created for the purpose of remembering Allah. But yet, this is the thing which takes us away from it. I'm not saying that we need to completely disregard them. There's a lot of useful purposes for them. But we need to have some controls and realize that what is the damage that it can be done to us. So the first step is that as adults, we need to set the example. That's number one. Number two is to cancel subscriptions to things like Netflix and foreign channels. You see, when something's available, that's when we use it. If it's not available, then we don't use it. Nobody has ever died because they didn't have a TV at home. Nobody has ever somehow starved because they didn't have a subscription to a cable channel service. Why do we have these devices? I understand that, okay, that there are some valuable content that we can learn from that we want to play, but that we don't need a connected TV for that. Right? We can, for example, have a screen and be projecting to that. But something which is connected and wired, you know, that's something that we would really need to question the need for having that. Number three is that if we're going to allow our children to use devices, of course, when it comes to certain purposes like research, you know, need to do homework at times, this is required. It should be done in a common area, not in the bedroom. It should be done in a way that we know what's going on. It should be monitored with software as well too. You know, I know that we would like to trust our children, and we do trust our children, but we also have to be reasonable as well too, and not make it to be the case that shaitan finds an easy way to be able to get to them. This one advice that I just gave right now, a number of families have told me that when they implemented it, when they said that they took away the personal devices from the children, then they saw great changes, right? So this is one advice that I have for you. Now, there's a few common sort of resistance that I find among parents. One of the things they say is that they feel like the children will be left behind if they don't have their own devices. Everyone else has been given iPads and cell phones of their own. They do whatever they want with them. They take them to the bedrooms, and somehow, if we don't give that to our children are going to be left behind. Brothers and sisters, if you go and see people who really understand technology and they understand the power that it has, what they do is they control how much their children have exposure to it. The CEO of the company that makes drones, it's called 3D Robotics, he says he sets limits on the media use for his children. The former vice president of Facebook says that social networking and social media is destroying the way society works. Bill Gates didn't allow his children to have their own phones until they were much older than the average age. Steve Jobs, even though he was the one who invented the iPad, he did not let his children have iPads. Right? Now, this is something that we need to think about. These are people who understand technology, and they're saying that, you know what, this is not safe for children. Our children do not need to have their own devices. That's what they're saying. And they're just looking at it on a physical, material, secular perspective. Imagine somebody who looks at it in a spiritual perspective. Even the current CEO of Apple says that he doesn't allow his nephew to go on social networks. Okay, another reason that we see that parents sometimes are not able to take away the devices from the children is they say that, you know what, we can't tell our children what to do. Our children are the ones who, they say that they want it, and therefore, they have to have it. And brothers and sisters, as a parent, what is our responsibility to our children? Is it to give them everything that they say that they need? No. We have to go and look and distinguish between what is a real need and what is something that they're wanting. Our responsibility is to fulfill those real needs that they have, but not those things which are not a real need. That's not our responsibility. And we can firmly stand in the face of it and say that no, this is not something that you need right now. There is no child that has suffered in any way because they didn't have their own device. In fact, I have many examples of children who have suffered greatly because of having their own device, whether it be academically, whether it be spiritually, whether it be on their personality, it starts to crumble because of having their own devices. So this is something that, you know, that we need to sometimes realize that we can take a firm stand with our children. Okay, now, some parents say that if I take a firm stand on it, and I don't allow my child to have their own device, I don't allow them to play video games, then they're going to go off and find other ways of doing so. Now, again, we're not saying that you have to ban everything. Maybe there are some things very carefully selected that you do, but then you are aware of that. You're in control of it. It's not on their own personal devices. It's very limited. You have certain quantities of time that you can allow that to happen. Then some parents say that if I take away the devices from my children, they're going to be bored to death. They won't know what to do at home. Very interesting. They did a study. It's a very commonly cited study where they took 100 preteens. They took away the devices from them, and they took them away for 5 days for camping. And what happened is they were able to prove that these children started to become children again. These teenagers started to become teenagers again. They started to develop compassion for one another. They started to smile again. They started to enjoy the world around them. The whole world itself is filled with wonder. The whole world is filled with opportunities for our children to explore and learn. They don't need to be stuck in front of a device. Our own experience, you know, with children in the community who don't have devices is that they're perfectly fine. They can find ways of being entertained in a way that actually helps them, doesn't take them away from Allah. And the other point I want to make is that sometimes parents say that, you know what, if it's not haram, then what's the harm? Or they say that if we're not going to do what we're watching, then what's the wrong with it? I'm watching, but I'm not going to do it. Right? I'm enjoying, you know, for example, these type of shows where you have all these type of relationships, but I'm not going to do the same thing. You see, brothers and sisters, everything that we watch has a message for us. Everything leaves an impression upon us. And the more we watch it, the more it's going to become normal for us to see. Even something like a simple cartoon made by Disney, let alone those ones I mentioned. For example, you take something like Toy Story. In Toy Story, what happens is that, and I'm giving this example because I really want to make it practical. We don't think about it. Okay, in Toy Story, what happens, for example, is that in one scene, you have Ken, the Barbie doll, and you have Barbie, the Barbie doll. Now, just go and see, for example, the dress code. Go and see the type of interaction that takes place. Go and see the type of music they play when that interaction is taking place. And then you ask yourself, what kind of worldview are our children being exposed to? What kind of ideologies are they being exposed to just through these type of clips? It's going to become okay for them to see, for example, people who are not married to be interacting in this way. It's going to be okay for them to have this type of dress code. Of course, it's going to have an impact on them. That's the person who makes this show. They have a certain perspective on the way things should be. And this is being transferred to our children when they see these things. So definitely there's a message that's coming across. And if you say that you're just going to see it and not going to do it, then that's a very naive approach. And finally, there's this one thing I hear from parents, which is that, you know what, nothing's going to happen to my child. You know, it might happen to others, but I know my child. You know, mashallah, you know, alhamdulillah, my child, they wouldn't do this type of stuff. Inshallah, they're not. Okay, inshallah, that's the case. But when you look at statistics, it's frightening. It's something which is terrifying. This statistics is from 2016. Around 53% of 11 to 16 year olds have encountered lewd material online, nearly all of whom, 94%, have seen it by the age of 14. 94%. Okay, now, this is something which the odds are pretty strong, right? That means that 9.4 out of every 10, and that was in 2016.
2016.
Okay, the adult industry says that 20 to 30% of the traffic is children. 20 to 30% is children. Okay, and when we look at anecdotal evidence from people who are involved with the community, it corroborates that, meaning that it's something that actually, even in our communities as well too, right? And many other statistics as well too. So brothers and sisters, this is an issue which we need to take seriously. My final comment on this is for the community as a whole. You see, we have people who come to the community center, and this is meant to be a house of God, where Allah's name is glorified, where Allah's name is worshipped. But the reality is that in centers, generally speaking, we see that sometimes our youth, they come for the programs and they actually end up getting exposure to the teachings of shaitan. How? Through the devices that their peers might be having. It's something which is terrifying. If I were to tell you the stories that we hear about some of the facade that takes place when the parents are busy with their friends and in their program and the children are somewhere else. Not only is it a matter of, you know, certain things being shown, but we have apps now where you can put in your preferences and your likes, and it will match with somebody else's who's in the same location, who has the same preferences and likes, and it will tell you that, by the way, you can communicate. Right? And sometimes, unfortunately, you have the houses of God which are being used for this type of purpose. Now, as a community, what can we do about that? Right? This is a question that I'm posing to you. I want to raise awareness of this. Right? Because obviously we want our second homes to be places of safety and of spirituality. But this is one area that we need to tackle. One of the things definitely we need to do is to have opportunities for parents to be educated about what's actually going on. They need to understand the harm involved. They need to understand these things and see the examples, and we need to make it easy for them to be able to do so. Sometimes programs like this, especially those who have younger children, it's difficult for them to attend. Right? But we can, inshallah, try to facilitate some type of program where they can attend as well and raise the awareness, and inshallah, make some decisions to be able to protect and secure the environment. We hope that this exploration has been a means for us to at least be an introduction to understanding the issue on the ground, and inshallah, a cause for further discussion among this community. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad wa alihi al-tahirin. As this is the last evening that I have the tawfiq to be with you, I would just like to beg your forgiveness if there's anything that I said or done that may have been cause of offense. I want to acknowledge the efforts of all those who have put in the effort to come to the program, to attend, to give the feedback, and may Allah reward you. I want to especially acknowledge the volunteers, the donors, the board, and all those who are involved with putting together these programs, people who we see and people who we don't see in the backgrounds who really put in so much effort. May Allah reward you and accept your efforts. And I wanted to especially acknowledge the efforts of Mawlana Sayyid Farhat Abbas for this community. May Allah Ta'ala continue to give him strength and tawfiq and wisdom to be able to guide this community. Please recite salawat on Muhammad. This night we are commemorating the Shahada of Sayyida Fatima al-Zahra alayhi salam. And it is the last night that we would be doing so, I want to focus particularly on the grief that is being, that we can find in the heart of Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam. The relationship of Amir al-Mu'mineen with Sayyida Fatima alayhi salam was a very special relationship. It is something that we can only get a glimpse of and try to understand. When they are married and Rasulullah asks them, how do you find each other? He says that, I found her to be the best helper when it comes to obeying Allah. And she says that, I find him to be the best of husbands. In one line of poetry, Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam describes the relationship, and he says that it's as if we were a pair of doves. You know, doves that they come together and they fly together, and they're always, they have this harmony and this pair and this bond which doesn't separate from one another. And so when we see that, you know, the last moments of the life of Sayyidah Fatima alayhi salam, we see that it's a very, very tender exchange that takes place between her and Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam. In one of the reports, she expresses to Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, she says that, Yabna Am, ما أحدتني كاذبة ولا خائنة ولا خالفتك منذ عاشرتني. Oh my cousin, not once have you found me to be somebody who said a lie. Not once have I been somebody to be treacherous towards you. And not once have I disobeyed you from the time that we have been living together. When Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam hears this from her, he says, Ma'ad Allah, we seek refuge from Allah. You are the one who knows Allah, and you are the one who is so pious, and you have so much taqwa, and you are so noble, and you have so much fear of Allah. How could I ever take you to account for any of these type of things? And as Sayyidah Fatima alayhi salam is telling her husband, forgive me if there's any rights which I may have violated of yours, perhaps Amir al-Mu'mineen would have also said that, oh my dear wife and spouse, forgive me if there's any rights that I might have violated of yours. Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, according to the reports, he would frequently visit the grave at the night time when nobody else would be there. And Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam would go, and he would have to express that grief in his heart in some way. And so we have some lines of poetry that are reported from Amir al-Mu'mineen. In one of them he says, لِكُلِّ اجْتِمَاعٍ مِنْ خَلِيلَيْنِ فُرْقَةٍ وَإِنَّ بَقَائِي عِنْدَكُمْ لَقَلِيلٍ وَإِنَّ افْتِقَادِ فَاطِمًا بَعْدَ أَحْمَدٍ دَلِيلٌ عَلَىٰ أَنْ لَا يَدُومَ خَلِيلٍ. He says that every time there are two friends who come together, there are two dear friends who are together, eventually that relationship will be separated. And indeed, having lost Fatima after losing Rasulullah Ahmad, that is proof that indeed this type of friendships in this world, they cannot last forever. Sallallahu alayki ya Fatima al-Zahra, ya bint Muhammad, ya qurrata ayn al-Rasul, ya Sayyidatana wa Mawlatana, inna tawajjahna wa istashfa'na wa tawassalna biki ila Allah wa qaddamnaki bayna yaday hajatina. This is the last night we are here together. Inshallah, she will listen to us and she will pray for us and be our shafi. Recite together. Ya wajihatan inda Allah, ishfa'i lana inda Allah. According to a report, Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, one night goes to the grave of his dear departed spouse Zahra. He cries out at the grave, Mali waqaftu ala al-qubur musallima. I am standing at the grave of Fatima, I am sending my salam to her. Which grave is this? Qabr al-Habibi, falam yuraddu jawabi. This is the grave of my beloved, but there is no answer coming to the salam that I am giving. And then Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam answers his own question. He says that, أَحَبِيبٌ مَا لَكَ لَا تُرَدُّ جَوَابَنَا أَنَسِيْتَ بَعْدِي قِلَّةَ الْأَحْبَابِ. قَالَ الْحَبِيبُ وَكَيْفَ لِي بِجَوَابِكُمْ وَأَنَا بَيْنٌ وَجَنَادِلَ وَتُرَابِ. The beloved answers the cry of the beloved. How can I possibly answer this salam when I am the one who is buried beneath the earth? This is the pain of Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam. According to a report, somebody asked him about the incident that took place with Sayyida Zahra. He tells him that, you know what, there's one thing that I can never forget. It is that scar and the bruise that the whip had left on Fatima alayhi salam. It was with her until the day that she died.
ألا لعنة الله على القوم الظالمين وسيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون. We ask Allah Ta'ala to accept this majlis from us. We pray to Him that He helps us be the true followers of Zahra alayha salam, and that she be the one who guides us into paradise in the day of judgment. We ask Allah Ta'ala to give us that insight and the strength to be able to guide ourselves and to be able to make the right decisions and to guide our youth towards being righteous youth and those who will inshallah be chosen as the companions of the Imam of our time. وَصَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَى مُحَمَّدٍ وَعَلَى الطَّاهِرِينَ